Mark Morano is unleashed, and he's taking on the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, and the United Nations on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT, today's News Talk Radio. All right, we have a good show for you here today. I have news that Joe Biden, our current president, was vice president when COVID hit. You may scratch your head and say, what are you talking about? That was Mike Pence, Donald Trump's vice president, when March of 2020, when the virus they called COVID hit, COVID-19, apparently Joe Biden misremembers things differently. Clip one.
And when I was vice president, things were kind of bad during the pandemic. And what happened was Barack said to me, go to Detroit and help fix it. Well, poor mayor, he spent more time with me than he ever thought he's going to have to. God love you.
I think this is not a failing memory. I don't think. I'll tell you what this is. This is not him even misremembering. This is the patter of just BS that politicians do. And Joe Biden is that old sort of union boss, quick stump speech, say what you can, try to entertain the audience. He's just talking smack. In other words, he's just saying, oh yeah, when I was vice president, we did this and that. Oh, we got whatever, poor man. He's just, whatever he needs to say at that moment, he will say. And I'm going to give him a pass. People are out there saying he's crazy. He's misremembered it. But, you know, Donald Trump is a New York City real estate developer. A lot of what he says is smack as well. You can't take it literally. I think this is one of those examples. Joe Biden is just trying to get through the moment, try to say something funny. And he's not funny necessarily, but something to connect with this person and connect with the audience with this person. And he just said it. So I just thought I'd have a little fun with that. That Barack Obama called him up during the pandemic. Hey, get over there and take care of it. I don't know. We'll see if there's any further development, but I still maintain Joe Biden is one trip on the steps, one hip break away from being not the Democratic Party nominee. Very frail, very old, very weak. You know, if he has one more tripping session, something, even if he just broke his hip, that would be pretty devastating for someone barely hanging on as he is. But we'll see. I mean, I predicted Biden would not be the nominee, and it looks like I could be wrong. We'll see what happens. That's coming up, I believe, in August. The Republican convention is going to be in July, like the third week of July. Okay. We are getting close to this World Health Organization pandemic treaty. Remember, I tried to go. I looked into it. I had their website, credentials. I talked to actually Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann about it. Very difficult. I did not want to be stuck outside shouting questions. I wanted to get inside and be an actual observer slash or media and was not able to do it, make it work this time. And it looked like it was very difficult. I would have, you know, I didn't have the force of the stars lining up to make this happen for me. But this is Dr. Kat Lindley giving us the recap. We're 7 days away, 6 days now, from the start of the 77th World Health Assembly meeting of the World Health Organization in Geneva. Talk about the pandemic treaty, to talk about the amendments to that. And this is her summary of what we'll be covering. We'll be covering this a lot on Unleashed coming up in the next 2 weeks. This is clip two, Dr. Kat Lindley on the pandemic treaty.
The wording might have changed. They put more legalese that I don't really understand very well, but the actual premise of the document stands, and the premise is for the World Health Organization, the Director General can still declare public health emergency. Sure, he kind of has to go to the committee and make sure that there is some kind of agreement, but he gets to appoint the committee members. So do you think there's going to be any resistance towards him declaring this public health emergency? No. We both know there won't be any, and he can still issue the quarantine, isolation, tell us what type of diagnostic treatments, vaccines we have to recommend. He can restrict travel into the area. He can institute the, you know, there is still that vaccine passport language is a little bit different, but it's still there. So we need to be, I 100% agree. we need to celebrate our wins, the fact that we put them on defensive and they have to defend all this, but we have to continue being very vigilant and aware that this is not something no one really wants. People don't want this for sure.
And there you have it. The WHO director, Tedros, will still have this unlimited power. He can declare a pandemic himself if he deems it meets the requirements as set out by him. Now, they are trying to say, well, he'll have this World Health Board that he's got to appeal to, and they have to agree, and he's got to go through and confer with this panel of experts. He appointed them all. They're all on the same mission. They all want complete control and no dissent. So why would any of them, as she said, go against him? So we will keep you posted of that. I'm thinking it's looking pretty good right now. I reported about 2 weeks ago that they missed all these negotiation deadlines. Tedros was spinning hard. The developing nations killed it last year over sovereignty issues. Biden's caught up in a re-election campaign. I haven't heard much chatter from the White House pushing this WHO pandemic treaty, especially in an election year. That would give Donald Trump another talking point. So I think it's going to go not with a bang, but a whimper. I don't think it's not over. Don't get me wrong, but it's going to be a big meeting next week. And I think they're not going to get what they want, which is, you know, the framework and agreement. They'll say they're kicking the can down the road. I've been through all this before. 19 out of the past 21 UN conferences attended in person all around the world. I'm going to Azerbaijani. I'm planning to go this November to COP. Boy, I've lost the numbers. I think it's COP 29. I think last year was COP 28, Conference of Parties of the UN climate treaty process, basically. And they just keep going. They're relentless. They have the funding of the billionaires and the Rockefellers and the United States government, the Chinese government. And as long as they have that, they're not giving up. And all they need to sweeten the pot, so to speak, is another virus or some kind of health scare global, and they could get this. See, we just told you why we needed this. Remember, the whole point of a pandemic treaty is so the WHO can be in charge and there can be no dissent from any of their decisions to try to stop any bad public health effects. And bad public health effects can be gun violence, i.e. gun control. It can be climate change, i.e. a hurricane or a flood is hitting, and that's caused by us. World Health Organization is going to have jurisdiction. They might start banning car travel to prevent the next hurricane. Who knows where they're going to head with this? Of course, it's also misinformation is a health threat. If someone tells you not to take the WHO recommended vaccine, that could kill you. So that's going to have to be regulated. So ergo censorship. There's no end to this. It's like a funhouse of ideas that they can go on forever. It's their path to total control of the of our entire, starting with public health freedom, health freedom in general, and then eventually all these other issues. Okay. This is a PBS clip. Fascinating. And listen to this clip. 85% of people 12 to 25 years old in the U.S. are concerned about climate change. Now, just pause for a second. That's a good stat. This is according to PBS. I'm going to show you two clips of this. This is important to understand what's going on with this. 85% of those between 12 and 25 are concerned about climate change. That's a key word, not believe it's happening. If they called me a pollster, do you believe climate change is happening? Yes, I do. Earth has always changed. Nothing unusual has happened. The one constant is that Earth is constantly changing, ergo climate changes. And they'd put me down as, oh, look, we have another believer in climate change. It's just so stupid. But this is a key word. According to PBS, this is concern. And that's actually legit. 85%. It's probably exaggerated a little, but these are the people that have been indoctrinated, the younger generation from kindergarten through college. And this is why you have these young Republican groups working with people like Kevin McCarthy and the House Freedom Caucus. And they say, and they have all these youth groups, allegedly, they call themselves conservative, who say, well, we're all concerned about climate, so we want the Republican Party to acknowledge it's a serious problem and we need solutions. But we don't want the Green New Deal. We want free market solutions. So they want Republicans, just like I've been seeing over the last few months, the Europeans, the Canadians, Pierre Poilievre, all the MPs in Europe, who just like, oh, we're not going to challenge net zero. Oh, we're not going to challenge climate change. But aren't you going just a little too far this time? That's what they want here in the United States. They want to codify that in the Republican Party. Well, F you. And let me show you this clip. This is PBS. This is clip three. This is, they're identifying how afraid kids are. And their solution, when you watch this, is more education, more crap propaganda from our government and academia and the climate activists. And that'll help the kids somehow. Clip three.
Last month was the warmest April on record and the 11th straight month of record highs around the world. Today, nearly a quarter of people globally live in drought conditions. And forecasters anticipate this year's Atlantic hurricane season will be the most active on record. All signs that climate change is an accelerating threat to the planet. And young Americans are worried about it. In fact, 85% of Generation Z is very or somewhat concerned about climate change, according to a Marist poll from earlier this year. In response, states like California, Connecticut, and New Jersey are now teaching kids about climate change in the classroom. One of the educators at the forefront of this is Lauren Madden, professor of elementary science education at the College of New Jersey. How do you go about incorporating climate change into a classroom curriculum?
So in New Jersey, it's a little bit simpler than it is in some other places because we have standards that are required to be taught at all grade levels and all subject areas. So they're really developmentally appropriate, and they're good tools for teachers to use to think about ways that they can connect to climate in things they're already doing in the classroom.
Could you give examples of how lessons about climate change may change from, say, first grade to ninth or 10th grade?
Yes, that's really important to be developmentally appropriate, especially when we're talking about working with young children. So in the early years, it's really about understanding what lives around you, what's supposed to be here when things happen seasonally, and some of the differences between weather and climate. It's not a tough concept for a young child to understand that weather is day-to-day changes while climate happens over long periods of time.
Did you see what just happened there? PBS reported that a poll comes out showing 85% of 12 to 25-year-olds are concerned or very concerned about climate change. The exact phrase of PBS was, in response, California increased their public, their education on climate change to the students. It's almost like, oh, you're all scared? Well, we better continue to scare the out of you. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to keep playing. We're going to keep filling your heads with more and more scare. Then they bring on this educator who's like, we're teaching them between climate and weather. Oh, really? And then they open up the segment about, oh, how we're having all this horrible weather. On climate timescales, hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, wildfires, droughts are either no trend or declining trend, 30, 50, 100 years. This is even acknowledged by the United Nations. This is acknowledged by the National Climate Assessment. So the idea is any weather event, oh, look, that's climate change. See, we warned you. It's just go peddle your crap somewhere else. Clip two of PBS is it's important not to lie to kids about climate change. Ooh, then why is PBS broadcasting this shit? Clip four.
Why do you think it's a necessary subject to teach students?
So I think it's really important that we don't lie to children, especially young children. Our children are seeing the effects of climate change in unprecedented ways. They're experiencing changes in their day-to-day lives that none of us have seen before. So, for example, last spring here in New Jersey and across the East Coast, we experienced dust in the air from Canadian wildfires. And that was something that affected children, all children, their ability to play outside, their ability to go about their day-to-day life. And we need to be clear with kids and let them know that something is happening, and this isn't just a bunch of surprise things that are going on, and scientists know what's going on. But the other more important piece is that our economy is going to change. What the future looks like and what the industries are that will be employing our children in the future will be around climate solutions.
Oh my gosh. First of all, let's start with the back. The future of careers and jobs will be climate solutions. What do you do? Oh, well, I'm a climate solutions specialist. And by the way, that's what the Washington Post actually has jobs. She might be right about that because of the government bullshit makeshift jobs and all the corporate government collusion and all the grants and the mandates and the subsidies. It's going to be a lot of silly jobs. My job is to change the climate. I'm fighting. Are you also fighting continental drift? Are you going to change the moon while you're at it? Like, are you going to, what the hell? Your job is a climate solution specialist and the kids need to be prepared. The economy is going to be changing. You got to go into a career in climate solutions. That's the, it's like the, was it the graduate? The next big thing is plastics. Let me tell you, boy, plastics, that's where you should be putting all your time and attention. And she says these kids have an unprecedented weathers and storm that's hit. No, they haven't. None of it's true. Zero of it is true. The Earth is billions of years old. You think we're going to sit here and be like, well, that's never happened. Did you see the flood in New Jersey? That's climate change. Oh, really? Global floods are down on a declining trend over the last 100 years in hydrological terms. So how is one effing storm in New Jersey mean these kids have to be told not a lie that that's because of our SUVs or coal plants? This is the educator telling your kids, filling their heads. Then they get a poll that shows all the kids concerned, gravely concerned. And then their response is, we need to up the education more and get these kids ready to be climate solution specialists. And we'll have government makeshift jobs for them. Or court will pay public-private partnerships and make sure the private sector, which is no longer private once you do a public-private partnership. Biggest bullshit ever. Was the Bush administration, George H.W. Bush, all these Republican presidents, we're going to do public-private partnerships. Oh, really? That's just a fancy way of saying we're going to hand out taxpayer money to our cronies who have the best lobbyists, best attorneys, and have been our campaign contributions, but it's going to be for some good cause. It's the old Bill Gates model, philanthrocapitalism. The more these politicians give away, the more rich they are, the more these billionaires give money away, the richer they become. It all supports their business model. All right. Sorry about all that. All right. Final clip. This is, we have a lot of fun with this, the World Health Organization Special Climate Envoy. So you get, you mix in the WHO with health and climate organization. And this is what we have. Vanessa Carey talking about aggressive action is needed to keep us on track to meet our temperature goals by the UN, which, by the way, the UN top scientists have admitted it's completely pulled from thin air, all of these climate goals, the 1.5, 2 degrees Celsius, all this nonsense. And she's warning of a point of no return, and she's warning that we have to phase out fossil fuels. So let's see what John Kerry's daughter, Vanessa Carey, World Health Organization, Climate Envoy for Health, Climate Health, Climate Envoy, whatever. Clip 5.
Projections suggest that without aggressive action, we are on track for a 2.9 degrees Celsius rise by the century's end, passing a point of no return for our oceans. And the impact on all of us will be profound. To protect the oceans and to save lives and livelihoods everywhere, we will need to continue to build on the steps of progress made. For example, the agreement on fossil fuels at COP28 was historic to acknowledge their role in driving the negative impacts of climate change we see today. Yet we must now continue the fight to phase out fossil fuels and ensure a just transition. We must bring evidence, strong leadership, common sense to compel our decisions. The good news is we know what the solutions are. First, we must urgently reduce the greenhouse gas emissions that are killing us. Air pollution from fossil fuel use alone accounts for over 5 million extra deaths a year around the world, almost as many as we've seen from the entire COVID pandemic. And greenhouse gases are driving the extreme changes accelerating today, worsening our situation.
This is a product of nepotism, her father, who's a product of marrying a billionaire. He married a Teresa Hines, the ketchup fortune. He has a daughter. She follows in his steps. She's now the WHO. She goes to the World Economic Forum. She's the WHO climate envoy, which is just a silly concept. And she's just, she may as well be that educator we saw the clip of. I think that was in New Jersey. Why don't you go teach children the same claptrap she's trying to promote? This is the ruling class, the governing elite, this is what we're up against. I mean, that's laughable, everything she said, but that's okay. I'm not even going to debunk it all. It's just because you heard me say it. But what I find amazing is in their minds, we have to give up this energy. And yet they would never do it in a million years. Her family, her father, her mother. I mean, they live. They always say, we're going to keep fossil fuels in the ground, yet they can't stop burning fossil fuels lavishly at 30,000 feet in their private jets. This is what we're up against. And when I hear like the young Republican groups like, oh, yeah, we need to accept climate's a problem. We need to appeal to you. No, we need to re-educate. We need to educate the youth and show them and let them mature and get older and they realize for themselves that they've been conned. We don't pander to that kind of nonsense. Anyway, all right. When we come back, we have to take a break. We'll be joined by Barry Hinckley, the primary drafter of the Redeclaration of Independence for the United States. He's the great grandson of Colonel James Barrett, commander of the Minutemen who engaged the British in 1775 in Concord, Massachusetts. And he's going to talk to us about what America needs and how our republic is under threat and how and why we have a rigged system with 98% of politicians who seek re-election, getting re-elected. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We got to take a break. We'll be back with Barry Hinckley when we return.
TNT's James Freeman.
Hundreds of protesters have gathered at London's High Court today to hear the judgment on the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange, and if he will be extradited to the United States. Now, the news that's come through literally in the past 10 minutes is that the two judges ruling on the case have declared that they are not satisfied by the US assurances and that Assange has been granted leave for appeal. It is a win of sorts, I guess, because it means he gets to appeal whether he'll get extradited. This was just to find out if he actually had the right to appeal it. So this is not game over. This is just one battle in a long war. What it does mean is that Julian Assange will not be extradited imminently to the U.S., which is clearly amazing news.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, joining the program now is Barry Hinckley, the primary drafter of the Redeclaration of Independence. And you can find this at redeclaration.org. He's the great-grandson of Colonel James Barrett, the commander of the Minutemen who engaged the British in 1775 at the North Bridge in Concord, Massachusetts. Welcome to the program, Barry Hinckley.
It's fantastic to be with you today, Mark.
Wow. All right. So let's start with your lineage here. You're related to you're the great-grandson of Colonel James Barrett. So for our audience, give us the McHistory version, the McDonald's. I say that because they shortened thumbnail sketch of what your great grandfather did at Concord as the Minutemen during the Revolutionary War.
Well, he was the colonel of the Minutemen in that particular region of Massachusetts at the time. As you know, there were a whole bunch of different units of Minutemen around Concord and Rhode Island and those areas at that time. He had served the British Army for years before. He was not young. He was in his 60s when he was the commander of the Minutemen in Concord. And I was born on April 18th, actually, which happened to be the day that Paul Revere and Prescott and Dawes left Boston to go to his house and alert them that the British were coming. And in those days, when you rose up against the crown, they locked you in your house. They lit it on fire as an example to everyone. But instead of suffering those consequences, they buried the munitions in the fields. And then they took the cannon and they took their guns and they waited for him and met him at the North Church. And there it began. The North Bridge. And there it began.
Wow. And that's your great grandfather. That's amazing. Well, lineage.
There's seven generations ago, right? So, you know, it's 240 years. So it's quite some time. But, you know, my name is Benjamin Barrett Hinckley. His father was Benjamin Barrett. So we've honored that lineage every single generation because we know how important the liberty we have in this country is. And our family's always honored that. So I decided to stand up and do something about it.
All right, so let's go forward then. You are from this family of patriots, and you have this lineage going back to the Revolutionary War, fighting for America's independence. Where did America go wrong? I'm going to ask you an uncomfortable question. Maybe it's not. Should the Civil War, should the South have been allowed to secede? Was that a key moment, you think, that affected later on, or do you think President Lincoln acted accordingly?
That's a tough one. I'm not a real student of the Civil War, and I have thought a lot about that because, you know, now as you look in the context of the Washington political empire, which I would contrast 100% with what the British Empire was doing to the colonies back in the mid 1700s. So, you know, we are being oppressed, our states' rights are being abused. They're not treating us like a republic that our founders designed us as, which, of course, your 9th and 10th Amendment, you know, especially the 10th Amendment, you know, if it's not in the Constitution, it's reserved for the states' rights. So that's a complicated question right now in the context. And if you want to know where I think things went wrong, a lot of people trace it to the New Deal, where federal spending exploded and they started to diminish states' rights.
And I think someone like economist Milton Friedman would write, I guess, the Federal Reserve creation of that, getting off the gold standard, and that would, and also World War One in general. But so you think 1930s is where America started losing some of the original founder spirit. Is that a fair thing to say?
Well, that's where the manipulation from the federal government began. And when you tell a man that you're going to put a chicken in every pot, he doesn't have to put a chicken in his own pot. There's something psychological that happens there. And when you have 44% of the country in some one way or another living off the government, you know, that's unsustainable when you have 160 million people that work in America and only half of those pay taxes. So you've got 80 million people propping up a country and all this debt and the rest of the world and the IMF. It's absolutely unsustainable. And that's all came from Washington, D.C.
It did. And then, of course, the New Deal was followed in the 60s by Lyndon Johnson, funded by Richard Nixon, the Great Society, which then a lot of people, economists like Thomas Sowell, Walter Williams credit with destroying America's inner cities. Going into the 80s, I think it was Tucker Carlson who recently said he'd like to go back to 1993 America. It may not be far enough, but do you agree with that? At least we were a lot freer and America was a lot greater of a nation back in, say, the early 90s.
I'd actually go back farther than that because I grew up in a manufacturing family and my family was devastated by the very, and I know you're very on the climate change wagon, as you should be, but if you look at what they're doing to us and they've done to manufacturing over the last 50 years, and when Nixon opened the door to China, then Clinton in 92 gave China the most favored nation trade status. That was a real kick in the chops when China can pollute the hell out of the left side of the Pacific. And I've worked on boats my whole life. I see how international shipping in these Asian countries trash the environment, but they can sell their stuff here and compete against American companies that are forced to treat it much differently.
I remember that whole debate, also NAFTA and the whole idea of most favored nation for China. So a lot of libertarians, and we have a lot of those in Washington, D.C., the Cato Institute, a lot of people say the Beltway libertarians, they will argue that America benefits to get the cheapest possible product and consumers pay less. But you're not buying that argument. You think that gutting America's industrial base, moving the reliance on China with the lowest human rights standards, lowest environmental standards, I might add, too, was a bad idea. Can you explore that a little bit more?
Yeah, one of the tenets of the Redeclaration of Independence that we wrote is level the playing field for American producers. Like, you know, if you're going to play a football game on Sunday and one set of players has to wear lead vests and live by one set of rules and the other ones can do cocaine before the match and no lead vest, you're going to get steamrolled, you know, because there's two sets of rules. And if you let China abuse the environment and abuse employees and import their goods relatively, very uncompetitively, and sell them here, but you hammer American businesses. And I grew up in American manufacturing in New England. I can tell you the government hammered us over and over again while making it easier and easier for international competitors to play here. Not fair.
And what do you think about free trade versus fair trade? It's a mantra of, you know, oh, we have to have free trade, free trade. Tariffs are constitutional. Do you have any objection to that? Are you opposed to free trade? What's your, because that's one of the issues. Do we allow, is that concept, again, the ideology driving this is the cheaper the product, the better. It doesn't matter where it's made, everyone benefits. But of course, if you're buying from a totalitarian regime and then you become dependent on them, like we will are for rare earth minerals, like we are, if we go all EV, if they force our hand and take away that, then China is going to dominate. And of course, China has all the rare earth monopoly. They can pull that anytime they want and they can control the world. But anyway, what's your view on free trade versus fair versus tariffs and protectionism?
Well, there's no such thing as free, right? Because if you're abusing the environment and then America is using all of our tax dollars to run around the world and try to save the environment, is it really free? Right? Is it really free trade? No. The cost to produce that good is the same. It took a human, it took resources, it took time. And those are all things that it takes here as well. But if you destroy humans and you destroy the environment in one place, you're really net losing. The whole world's net losing. So I'm all about fair trade. But once again, this is the richest environment, you know, commercial environment in the world. And if you want to sell your stuff here, just like if you want to play in the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball, you need to play by the same set of rules. It shouldn't be difficult to understand.
All right, so let's move on. Now, let's talk about your redeclaration.org, the Redeclaration of Independence. Can you tell us what it is? Who wrote it? I guess you're one of the key writers of it, and how it would go about it. Let's go first. What are the tenets of this Redeclaration of Independence?
Well, there's 10 tenets, and we can, if people just go to redeclaration.org, you can read them. It'll take us a while to go through them all, but you know, they're basic common sense, man on the street test, balanced budget, term limits, balancing the playing field for American producers and workers, ending wokeness in returning the military to a meritocracy from, you know, preferences and quotas, ending the Department of Education. I mean, we talked about the New Deal, and then we talked about, you know, Johnson's war on poverty, both government, massive government. Well, you know, New Deal, a little debatable, but he certainly got backed up by World War II. But then you look at Jimmy Carter in the 70s when he produced the Department of Education, multi-trillion dollar failure. Our results are less. We've spent trillions. There's 32 industrialized nations. We're at the very bottom and spend at the top. Time to end that experiment. These are some of the tenets. And what the Redeclaration of Independence is, it is a measuring stick that we give to our representatives and say, if you want to represent us in Washington, you have to stand for these things. And if you don't, we'll find someone that will.
So it's kind of like a contract for America, correct? That like the Republicans
want.
And so it's not, when you say, it's not anything, it's not like an amendment to the Constitution, no states need to ratify it. It's more of like a platform, like a pledge that politicians would agree to. Is that how you would consider it?
Yeah, it's somewhere between the contract in America and also the pledge they take up in New Hampshire. Very few people know about the pledge, but New Hampshire has this pledge. And the reason they don't have any new taxes, and they haven't in four decades, is because if you want to run for office, Democrat or Republican, it's a social contract, and you take what's known as the pledge. And the pledge is when you are in office, you will not introduce a new tax. And so if you do and you come back, you've broken that pledge and we will vote you out. So we need, you know, sadly, our representatives are not doing the people's work anymore. At least that's our opinion. And we need to direct them on what to do. You know, I often think about our children in this massive amounts of debt, for example. And it's unpayable at this point. And so why are we sending the same people back unless they can make a commitment to rein in the debt, for example? These are basic things. And they've let us down. Our representatives have. And this is our effort for accountability.
Yeah, it's funny. At least federally, the idea of tax limits is kind of laughable these days because they don't really need to raise taxes anymore. They can just print money and spend whatever the hell they want. It's part of this modern monetary theory. I'm not sure how it applies to states. I don't think states can print their own money. So they do have to raise taxes, or I guess they can just continue deficit spending as well. But a balanced budget—
Or they
can
send representatives to Washington that beg for a bunch of money to prop up failing cities like San Francisco and New York, LA.
Yes. All right, let's go. It says honor and enforce the Constitution as written. So exactly what does that mean? Because that's, you know, that can be open to interpretation, the Supreme Court. What exactly issues are you referring to there when you say that? Are you basically calling for strict constructionist judges to be appointed? Is that what that tenet is?
Well, that tenet is really about the operating system that is the Constitution that defines us as a republic. So I have a pretty significant software background, and the Constitution is our operating system. But the lovely thing about great software and our Constitution is clean, simple code runs and scales the best. And if you look at the Second Amendment, which is why you and I are allowed to have this conversation today, the First Amendment, you know, it's 45 words long. It has five basic freedoms baked into it. Ask a lawyer to write that today. He couldn't. It would be 10,000 words. So it's very good, clean code. And we need to honor this code. And also, as it relates to the Dobbs decision or anything else, that had nothing to do with abortion. That was the lever they used that brought it up. But the reality is, you know, once again, the 10th Amendment, if it is not defined in the Constitution, that right is reserved for the states. You know, Dobbs was, Roe v. Wade was just a backdoor through the Privacy Clause, never envisioned to be used that way. So enforce the Constitution as written. And the great thing about the Constitution, if you believe that abortion rights should be the same in every state as they are in Massachusetts, our founders were geniuses. They gave us a provision for that. It's called an amendment. Go get one. We already have 27. You can go get number 28. Go for it. But this operating system works, and that's why this is the most successful experiment in U.S. in global history.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like with censorship, freedom of speech, the First Amendment, we're at a point in 2024 America where if you disagree with whatever with any agency of the government, be it NASA on climate, be it the Pentagon on the war, be it the CDC on public health, you're de facto labeled a misinformer, disinformer, you're defunded, canceled, you're censored. How did America get to that point? I mean, it seems like that the First Amendment protection seemed to be the most important of all. I mean, obviously, Second Amendment. I mean, they're all important, but it seems like without that First Amendment, that's why it's the first one. How did we get to the point where any American who disagrees with a claim by a government bureaucracy is an automatic candidate for censorship for misinformation?
Well, there's a few things. If I wanted to boil it down to a few phrases, I mean, Eisenhower warned us against the military-industrial complex. It's massive. It's global. And much of course, the money stems from the United States. So that's a big problem. The Patriot Act, certainly, you know, once again, never let a crisis go to waste. They took the crisis of 9/11, which obviously was a crisis, and they slipped in the Patriot Act, and we lost a lot of freedoms there. And plus, we had this massive infrastructure. When was the last time you saw the government shrink, Mark? You know, we had this massive government infrastructure left over from the Cold War and spying, and we had an agency called the CIA, which since 1947, when they were founded, they've tipped over 48 governments. They just didn't stop going to work. They just started focusing sadly on us.
Actually, good question about when's the last time. We had a historian on earlier this week on Unleashed on TNT. And if you go back, and I remember reading this in the 80s, every president basically since FDR has essentially presided over America moving further and further left. Further and further to restrictions, further and further to overreaching government. Except there was a blip in early 80s with Reagan, but I'd say by the end of his term, it sort of came back. There's probably a blip during the Republican Congress and Bill Clinton, but then it came back. And that's about it. I mean, we just continued, maybe a tiny blip. You can't even say that when Donald Trump was elected, because he spent like a drunken sailor with budgets. He didn't care about any kind of restraint. So once we've got into this, it doesn't matter who's president. America just continues that march. So I want to talk more, especially I want to get into a little bit about the foreign policy here and also what you said about the Patriot Act and essentially the surveillance state we're living under. But we'll get back to that. We have to take a break. We're talking about the Redeclaration of Independence, redeclaration.org. And we're talking with Barry Hinckley, the primary drafter of that. We'll be right back. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries, stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Food isn't just fuel to live, it's fuel to grow. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. When people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger, and together we can open endless possibilities for people to thrive. Visit feedingamerica.org/act now.
From climate change to energy and environmental matters, you're listening to Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano. All right, we're talking with Barry Hinckley, the drafter of the Redeclaration of Independence, and the great grandson of Colonel James Bandit, the commander of Barrett, the commander of the Minutemen, who engaged the British in 1775 in Concord, Massachusetts. All right. So Barry, we're looking at this. You mentioned the Patriot Act. I interviewed a candidate the other day. The first one, by the way, one of his tenets is to repeal the Patriot Act. It doesn't seem like much of the Republican Party cares about repealing the Patriot Act. Very few people, certainly none of the leadership. In fact, Republican Party just recently voted for speech codes and hate speech encoding, and only 20 Republicans voted against that bill a couple weeks ago. It seems like the Republican Party, if they're the heir to this, to the freedom of the founding of our republic, they're doing a lousy job of that. But expand on that Patriot Act. It created this surveillance state in America. Explain how that passed and how we can repeal that.
Well, we're not going to repeal it, to your point, with the people that are there, because they're yeah. there. And they did it. I keep asking people, so please point to me one thing that's working. Like, we've got these people that have been there for, 10, 20, 30, 40, 60 years in some cases almost, and everything's gotten worse. Patriot Act is just another example of growing government encroachment upon our liberties and expansion of government agencies. I mean, out of the Patriot Act, as you know, it became the Department of Homeland Security. And what have they done? We have the Department of Homeland Security, and we've got 12 million people that just came across the border. Obviously, they're doing a worse job than before we had a Department of Homeland Security. So it's a giant government disaster. And, we need to send someone in there that new representatives that have a constitutional republic. And I say Republican with air quotes, because that's where supposedly we the term Republicans came from, because we believe that we are a constitutional republic, not a plural democracy like France.
All right, so that leads us into the foreign policy. I assume there's an America First foreign policy here as well. I mean, I don't know what your views are on the last, I was opposed to every war, beginning with the Gulf War in 1990, as opposed to Iraq War, as opposed to occupying Afghanistan, as opposed to most of these military interventions, as opposed to aid to Ukraine. Does that take a role in this redeclaration, any kind of America First foreign policy?
Yeah, one of the tenets is that we don't aid other nations or honor any United Nation policy until we take care of Americans and American veterans first. I mean, that old saying, Mark, that, don't ever take advice from someone whose life's a mess. How are we giving anyone advice on how to run their country when we are, I used to give a lot of speeches, because I did run for U.S. Senate against Sheldon Whitehouse about a decade ago. And I used to ask the kids in the audience, because you have to get their attention. I know you've given speeches to a lot of kids over the years. And you like to play games with them. And I used to ask them, how long do you think a trillion seconds is, if you counted to a trillion? And people would say, you know, you'd have, you know, 5 years, 10 years, and one wise ass would yell out 35 years. And the reality is, if you counted to a trillion, it would take you almost 32,000 years. And we've got 34 trillion just on the short-term credit card, you know, estimated 200 trillion in unfunded liabilities and promises we've made. How on earth are we going to advise or tell any other nation how to run themselves or what to do when we can't run this place and we can't take care of our veterans and our cities are crumbling? We need to focus here. And that shouldn't be called nationalism or some other ism that they just, you know, wrap around us to try to take us down. That should be called common sense.
Yeah, that's a tough one because, you know, it's incredible that the Republicans, our new House Speaker, I mean, it's incredible, just the Republican Party. I always say, I don't even care. Democrats do what, you know, you expect them to do. We're supposed to, the Republican Party is supposed to be the leader of the opposition to all this, and they go right along with it. I mean, I'd say 90% of Republicans, you can have them in the House. The Senate, maybe, you know, 70%, you can have them. Like term limits, for instance, I worked as a Senate staffer, and I remember people always saying, oh, you can't have term limits because then you'll just have an imperial staff because you'll have these new politicians and the staff will get too much power. And it's like, well, hey, let's put term limits on the staff. Well, then you wouldn't have the expertise. And then you ask the question, well, what has all that expertise ever gotten us? It's gotten us, you know, well-oiled lobbyists controlling Washington, campaign donors controlling Washington. This is a tough battle. One of your tenets is secure our elections. What would you do about that?
Well, isn't it interesting that we can, you know, have a banking system and I can store money in my bank and I'm pretty confident that my money is going to be there tomorrow when I wake up and I can count the money and the same amount is going to be there tomorrow, maybe even a little more because I got some interest, you know, these days, but we can't count votes. This is America. Supposedly we put someone on the moon. Supposedly we've invented, you know, jet aviation and, you know, all kinds of unbelievable scientific feats. So, you know, one of our tenets is securing our elections because you can't have a trust in a government if you can't trust your elections. So we call for single day elections. We'd like it to be a national holiday. We'd recommend that we actually move it to Veterans Day to honor the sacrifices of our veterans because Veterans Day is overlooked so much now these days. And we use a single day in-person paper balloting with voter ID. And you can, of course, you know, military and others, you know, can go through the process and get an absentee ballot. But this mail it in everywhere. You know, when I ran for U.S. Senate in Rhode Island, they knew there was a lot of corruption in the system because the state of Rhode Island told me that I had to beat Sheldon Whitehouse by 5 or 6% to tie him. The Secretary of State's office told me that there was that much fraud in 2012. So just imagine with all the mail-in votes how much fraud there is. We need to fix that.
All right. It's incredible because there's so much we need, but there's no matter who, again, I'm going to bash Republicans. Mike Johnson comes in to replace Kevin McCarthy as a House Speaker. Supposedly this stalwart conservative, he comes in immediately. He's part of the Uniparty. Nothing he does is impressive. It's pathetic. And you know why Republicans can't remove him? Because the Democrats want to keep him in power. They've already pledged to keep him in power because they like him so much. The Uniparty. All right. You have here, enforce American laws, not UN policy on America. I think if I was going to propose an amendment to your redeclaration, I think I would put not WHO or World Health Organization or World Economic Forum, because the UN is not the only player in this. But I assume that means no UN climate net zero, no World Health Organization pandemic treaty, which the Biden administration is trying to get us signed on to.
Yeah, I mean, the WHO is just a derivative of the UN, but it's, you know, it's UN or UN-esque type organizations. And yeah. I guess we should get more specific, but let's start with the UN. But certainly what the World Health Organization is trying to do, you know, America, it's a giant land grab. The globalists have understood that this is the most successful, you know, wealth production machine in the world. And everyone wants a slice of it. And they think they can crash the gates and change the rules to do that. And this is one of the, you know, the line items in the redeclaration that hopefully will get our, you know, our leaders in Washington to respect our rights and our laws and not honor international law upon us or lay it upon us.
All right. And then you have end the U.S. Department of Education. Now, this is one, I guess it was Ron DeSantis. I'd had enough. You know, when he was running for president and he said, I'm going to abolish. My first response when he said he's going to abolish, I said, bullshit. I didn't say this to him, but to myself, bullshit. Every candidate since Ronald Reagan, at least, has been talking about abolishing the Department of Education. Never even come close to happening. Not even an option, really. I like that it's in here because you're trying to do it. But how do you actually end a department? The only way you could end a department is to create a new one and like your Department of Homeland Security and then merge stuff. But how do you actually go about ending? When I say BS, I'm not saying it like it's a bad goal, but how do you actually make it happen? I'm just so jilted. I no longer believe it's possible. Help me. Give me some optimism.
Well, I mean, when a president says they're going to end it, they certainly have to have Congress to go along. And that's why the REDEC is focused on congressional candidates and Senate candidates, because without people in there willing to do the business and without turnover, we got to get term limits. You know, people, and you mentioned it earlier, well, people say things will fall apart. We need that expertise. What if you have a good rep? You want to keep them? I ask them, so how are things going now? Because they say, I'm going to go in there and abolish the Department of Education, which doesn't educate our kids. It's simply a government jobs program that gets Democrats reelected in a 50-50 country. When you have 4 million families that are either working in the school system or related to someone, it is, that's the over in an election. That's why it exists. So we have to get reps there with the fortitude and desire to do so. Boils down to that.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Barry Hankley, the drafter of the Redeclaration of Independence. You can see it at redeclaration.org. Thank you for taking the time. And just one last question to answer quickly. Is this being greeted by Republican candidates? Are you trying to get them to sign for 2024? And are they committing to it? Or are they running?
Yeah, they are.
Like chicken from you.
Well, they are. I mean, as the primaries end, they start signing on more and more. But if you go to redeclaration.org, ask your listeners to sign it, forward it to 10 friends, and demand your rep does the same.
All right. Thank you so much. Barry Hankley, drafter of Redeclaration of Independence. Thank you for joining Unleashed today.
Great to be with you, Mark.
All right. Thank you. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back after these messages.